Hello everybody, this is the Gingerbread Man, and I'd like to welcome you to my home. I'm here with a very good friend of mine today. This is Megan. We go back really far. I've always called her my sister. She's always been like an older sister of mine. Like, I've known her since the beginning of high school. Like, if I've had a bad day and I'm looking for my old, like, the older sibling that I never really feel I had, this is the person that I'd call. And so I'm very happy and I'm very grateful to have her today. Why don't you introduce yourself and say a couple things about yourself?
All right. Hey, guys. I'm Megan. Nice to be here. Thank you, Brandon. I appreciate you. I am a mom, single boy, working hard, stressing every day. Son has medical issues. Life's overwhelming.
Yeah, it gets that way, especially when you're doing it by yourself. And that's very admirable, you know, like, yeah, prop yourself up sometimes. I can't tell you how much respect I have for you and what you do. You know, you had your kids so much earlier than all of us. You know, like, a person I had on the show earlier was a good friend of mine. His name was Dorian. He had the kid first, I think, out of everybody. And his son is, like, what, 8 or 9 years old now?
He has to be at least 9.
Yeah.
Almost
but,
10.
Yeah, it's nuts. That double digits is starting to get there. But Megan had her son when we were still in high school. She's a little bit older than me. Not much, but...
You
know,
couple years.
But still, you know, like...
I already graduated high school, at least. Yeah. Got out of that one.
Yeah. But just seeing her kick ass and, like, her and her husband had ended up going up and, like, moving up to, like, Oregon. And she's come back, like, 3 different times. And this woman's been through some shit. And the way that she's always been there for her son, like, you know, anybody who sees somebody work that hard should have a smile on their face is all I'm saying.
Thank you.
Let's get into some meat. So how important is parenting? Like, what, how would you define the word parenting? Like, what is parenting? What is the emphasis of parenting? Like, how important, if you were to tell somebody who is a new mom or a new dad or somebody who's even been a parent for a while, like, how would you describe the importance of what we do?
Funny, I actually had this conversation with a coworker recently, and she's got a 10-month-old baby boy. Super cute, super sweet. She revolves her entire life around him like... all of us do. Our kids are our lives. It's a parenting. Parenting is a lifestyle. There's no, I don't know, if you just kind of live it or you don't. It becomes your everyday, you know? But within that, I was just reminding Lisa the other day that you're still you. You are still you as a person, as a human being. You may be called mom, but you are still also Brandon. You are still also Megan. You are still also your individual person. Like, being a parent is a lifestyle, but you can't lose yourself in that.
And how important is that to model that to our children as well? Because if we don't model individuality to our children and say, I am my own person, when you might segment yourself, like when I sit down for a book and I'm like, you know, telling my kid, you know, I need a space, I need a second. Same time, I'm modeling that so in the future, he knows that there might come a day when he's an adult and he might have had a time in his day and he knows, hey, everybody around me, this is my moment. I need to craft this out. And we model that now.
Give me some meat.
You know,
right? Right. And that's really important for them to know so they can grow up and learn to deal with their emotions properly. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to, I firmly believe you have to be real with your kids. They know they don't need to know about the bills and the stressful things like that, but you have to be realistic with them. Mm-hmm. You know, if they ask for something, you can't just say no. You need to explain to them, you know, one reason or another, however detailed you want to get with it. You know, you need to let them know there's a reason behind it. I'm not just saying no because I'm mean. There's a reason for it. You know, parenting is hard for
That's
anyone.
Confusing.
It is hard. It is confusing. It doesn't matter how old and prepared you think you are. It is such a drastic lifestyle change. People, you know, grow up raising their siblings, you mm-hmm. know, taking care of their cousins or, you know, their nieces and nephews. Like, they grow, a lot of people grow up doing that. I did that. Like, I love taking care of my family like that. But becoming a parent itself is different. There's at one point, truly a physical connection between you and that child.
Especially, like, as a mother.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
Something a father doesn't feel. And for a long time, I tried to fight that. When I was younger, I always tried to push this neutrality point of it. But as a father, I've noticed these inconsistencies.
And you pushed that because you had a desire for it. You wanted that experience. That's different than just saying, oh, I can do this, you know?
But there are crucial differences between what it means to be a mother and what it means to be a father. And the biological aspect is something that I've been thinking about a lot recently, is like how interconnected you're sharing blood. And you think about how important your blood is and what you carry in your blood and all these interconnected within your body. And if you have something inside your body, I tried to not consider that as much. I brushed that off in my youth, especially when I was a young father. And I just I felt inferior in a way. And that's not fair. It's not like there's an inferiority or a superiority across the board. There's just crucial differences, and it's necessary to have both of those elements.
Absolutely.
You know, like single parenting is not the best ordeal.
It's not impossible, but there are days that it feels completely impossible to try and be the feminine caring mother and also the masculine and stern dad, you know, quote unquote, like stereotypically through history. There's those two specific roles for a reason. And when you're trying to play both of those roles,
And even if you have two women, I'd like to say, if you have a lesbian couple, but still there's, I think even every man, just like you said, I have a feminine side that I would like to cast her out. I don't ever feel like I'm an alpha male. I've never carried myself as an alpha male. And for a long time I was insecure about how people perceived me because I knew that I didn't carry that alpha male masculine attitude. You remember Jonah?
Absolutely.
So many times he tried to get me laid when we were kids. You know, like we'd be in Denver and just weird places. I took him to this like festival in Salida one time, me and my dad. We went out there and I took him with me, and he's like, you know, 9.5 feet tall. He's never had any issues talking to women. And we're at this festival and there's just like thousands of people in Salida, and he's like, we're gonna get you laid tonight. And I'm just like, okay. Can we just go watch these people play some music?
Right.
You know, like, it's like, but at the same time, I would say that I have a masculine part of my body, a part of myself. And I think that every human being should have a balance.
Exactly. Every human being does. I have a firm masculine side. I can hold my own better than any man could for me.
You probably beat most dudes up that I've seen you interact
happily
with. Happily. He'll punch through a window.
Yes. I will throw fists if I need to, and they won't come back for more. Like, simple. People have made these comments to me. You know, I can be sweet. I can be loving. I can be caring. I will take care of anybody. But I am not scared to hold my own.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to do that. And when I say masculine, I'm not talking about difference between man and woman. I'm saying there has to be a strength to everybody.
Like it's yin and yang. So in Chinese philosophy, the yin and the yang is the powerful force. It's usually denoted by heaven. And then the yin is the yielding force, which isn't weakness. So consider, this is one of the things that I pull out of a Tao. So imagine you have a ceiling with a beam, right? If the beam is too firm, and it doesn't yield to some of the pressure, something that's too firm becomes brittle. So the yin aspect, the yielding aspect, the weakness of the wood that allows it to bow,
to flex,
that's what makes it able to hold the house up. You know, exactly. Like yielding and it's not a weakness at all.
It's knowledge.
Like it's just, yeah.
It's knowing when you need to flex and when you don't.
Yeah, flex is a good word. Like I did this religious flex on somebody a while back. It was the first time I had been able to do my little religion flex on somebody because I read the first five books of the Bible, and there's this guy. I think I told you the story, but he was just digging on. It was like this person talking about eating roaches or eating crickets or something. It was like, I think it was like a dude from Mexico. So it's like it was very culturally appropriate,
right?
And this guy gets on the comments and he's like, oh, God, this is so far out of God's grace or something like that. And so in Leviticus, there's actually a section during the whole rule bit where God explicitly is talking to Moses and says that all jumping creatures, which he's specifically denoting crickets, little jumping creatures upon the earth are there for your food. It's like, these are one of the things that God offered up as a food source. And he's like, and so I quoted it, did the Leviticus, I did all the things, and I was like, this, did you do? And I was like, flex, man. Yeah. This is my religious flex on you. You can't say this. Like, yeah.
Well, good job. That's, yeah,
I digress. So, How would you go about when it comes to parenting with your son? How are you going about nurturing the yielding and the strengthening force? And what ways do you think about how you could model that for your child? Like,
I guess one example is when Leon gets in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
He's an 8-year-old boy. Like, they cause trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun to them. And it's not dangerous yet, but when he gets in trouble for that, I explain to him why he's in trouble for it,
mm-hmm.
how it could be dangerous if he did, you know, X, Y, or Z. And then I also explain to him how much I love him. Like, I do the masculine and the feminine together in a group, one before the other. You know, if it's something that actually, like, really scared me, I will, like, the Royal Gorge incident
mm-hmm.
we were talking about.
Why don't you tell it? That's a good one.
Okay, so at the Royal Gorge on the other side of the bridge, once you cross, there's, like, a high point to, like, a low mm-hmm. in the gorge.
The Royal Gorge is a place in Colorado. It's like a mini Grand Canyon,
mm-hmm, yep.
And it's really hard to express how far down. It's not like the Grand Canyon. Grand Canyon would eat this thing, but still, for being in the middle of nowhere,
it's walk second up to this place thing. For sure.
Yeah,
it's absolutely. So it's massive. It's huge. Just walking across the bridge alone, it's a massive bridge. You can still feel the sway. If you drop anything, it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
It's just gone.
You would lose sight of it before it hits the ground.
Exactly.
And there's a big ass river at the bottom of it.
Right.
It's like literally like 100 feet across, and when you look down at it, it looks like a little thin little like a hair.
Across is more than like 100.
Yeah.
The river, probably. I don't know. Well, okay, so we had crossed the bridge and we went up to this viewpoint, and there's chain link fences everywhere, so no one can get too close to the edge, right? It's just safe. Well, they have this high point with like the lowest low in the canyon, and this big, like, it's like a brick patio kind of thing. There's only maybe like a 3-foot wall around it, like a brick wall, and you can just like look out, see everything. My son was about 3 years old at the time, very small.
Mm-hmm. Not communicating well either, and they're suicidal at that point.
They're
don't
wild.
Really give a shit.
They have no concept of what it means to go over that wall. So he put his hands on that wall, and he jumped up because he could see out, but he couldn't see down. So he put his hands on that wall, he jumped up to where his hips hit the wall, and he leaned over.
So no,
this kid's got a big head, let me tell you.
No feet on the ground.
No feet on the ground, hands on the wall, hips like right at it, and then he just looked over, and instantly I had really long acrylic nails at the time. I grabbed his back, I grabbed his shirt, I ripped him back. And in that instance, all I could do was love on him immediately first.
Mm-hmm.
I held him so tight, I cried, I told him how much I loved him. Then I got upset.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was mad. And he was upset too. He was crying because I did scratch his back. He almost went over this freaking wall. This 3-year-old.
That meant you would have gone over too.
That meant I would have jumped right behind him.
We would have lost two there.
Like, yeah. And that was truly like my first heart attack in life. Like with having a child. It was terrifying. He had no clue what even could have happened.
Mm.
Like, and I did my best to explain
it
to him.
He don't even remember now.
No, not at all. He might be like, oh yeah, you scratched my back, Mom, but he doesn't remember the concept of like how close he was. Like I said, the kid's got a big head. Like
mm-hmm.
that's a lot of weight to be pulling against those feet that aren't even on the ground. Like, it was terrifying. It was absolutely terrifying. And my first reaction was to tell him how much I loved him. My God, thank God you're safe. Like, and then go into what were you thinking? Are you
mm-hmm.
insane? That was, you could have died. Like,
interesting. So within punishment, this is something I've always considered, because I've been on this spectrum on how hard and soft I've been with my son, and it's not completely fair to him either. Like, I want to get to a point where I'm very confident in how I want to approach him in certain situations, and I just haven't got there yet. Sometimes I overstray, sometimes I underreact. But when with punishment, you know, I feel that the reason, if it's done correctly, which is why it's such a fickle thing that worries me with how I use punishment.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, as soon as you instill a punishment act, that means that A, it should be a perfunctory note. You're almost like putting like a scar in the brain. It's not about the body. It's more of a mental moment.
Mm-hmm.
And you're hoping, not hoping. It's not like it's a guarantee all the time, but it's like I got fingers crossed that I'm going to put this little scratch here, and when next time you encounter this situation, your brain's going to be able to pick up and shoot you that memory. That's the purpose of this punishment.
And try to avoid that.
Is I'm trying to imprint a memory. That's the most important thing that I'm doing here. But hopefully it should be one and done. Hits the pot, ow. You know, or freak them out, mom scratches the back, don't go against that wall again. And that should be a one and done. And I feel like where I overdo punishment is when it starts to become small things. When I'm you know, especially I don't spank my son anymore. I've never hurt my son, never left a mark. I would never say I abused my child, but I spanked my son. It's when he was younger, you mm-hmm. know? And I haven't spanked him in a very, very long time.
I don't disagree with physical. To an extent, obviously. I have only maybe had to spank Leon not even a handful of times.
Hundreds. I have hundreds. I can't tell how many times I've sat, because afterwards you feel horrible.
Well, okay, so the thing is, when I was a kid, my parents loved to beat us. Like a wooden spoon, a belt, whatever they could get their hands on. Like, they were all about that physical, literally gonna beat you. Mm-hmm. And that traumatized me, and that's something I did not want my son to experience. And so not wanting to, because I feel like it's really easy to lose control mm-hmm. when it comes to physical. They, you know, they build a tolerance at some point. They, you know, learn to expect it at some point. You know, if they mess up, they're gonna get spanked no matter what. You know, mm-hmm. they learn to like expect that. When they expect it and they, you know, laugh at you or act like it's not gonna be that bad or do anything, that just, you know, would set you off even more. I don't want to lose control like that. Mm-hmm. I do personally have a lot of anger issues. There's a lot. And to lose control on my son like that is not something I was willing to do. But I did learn to use my voice, my eyes, my language. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't yell at him, but that stern voice and that look from my eyes, he gets it. I don't have to yell. I don't. And if I do have to yell, like, it's a 2-second thing. It's mm-hmm. like my voice is up and it's right back down because he gets it. I don't have to go to the spanking thing. I don't have to. And again, being open and explaining to your kid, you know, did I just snap at him because I was having a bad day or exactly. because he, you know, is truly like not listening. I've told him to stop for the 20 millionth time. Mm. You know, you have to explain to him, like, I apologize. I shouldn't have snapped at you like that. Like, that was too far. Like, yes, you were. Just communication. How can we expect them to communicate if we can't communicate with them? They are learning everything from us. Like, they probably wouldn't even know how to breathe if they didn't see us do it. Mm-hmm. Like,
that's a good one. No, it's true. It makes you think.
It's heavy. We are, and especially when you're doing the single parent thing, when you don't have, you know, a specific partner by your side that takes 50% of that role, you know, mm-hmm. when you're doing all of that, and especially after working all day and trying to take care of all of the groceries and the other errands cooking. And guess what? Your car needs an oil change. And there's a million things going on.
Somebody hits you on a mountain road.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you get hit by a Bureau of Land Management agent, T-bone, on the switchback of a dirt road out in the mountains.
You should have seen her car. Her car was so messed up after this. It was a pretty big.
She was 2 weeks on the job, and she was going way too fast. Like, she was just going, like, I truly feel like if we were not there that day, that she probably just would have gone off that cliff. Because there's no way she could have made that turn safely any sooner. That's an interesting perspective. Like, and I have to have that perspective because I'm still waiting for the government to pay me back for everything.
Yeah, fuck that.
Yeah, dude, I had to use my insurance. I had to use all of my savings for everything. Like, it screwed me up. It messed with a lot of my life. And July 6th will be 1 year since that accident happened.
No shit.
1 year.
That's crazy. This year has gone by so fast.
I'm saying, like, and I'm still waiting on this. Like, and they don't care. Big surprise. It's government.
That's
whatever.
Bullshit. What if somebody had actually been harmed and you had some bodily
injury?
Dude,
that's what I'm saying. My best friend was in the car seat. Our children. He was three last. Yeah, Milo's three, and Leon had just turned 7.
Mm-hmm.
Both of our kids were in the back seat. We were like just mere feet away from being pushed off of this cliff of this freaking switchback in the mountain by a BLM agent. Mm. And they don't care. Both of my driver's side doors completely smashed in. Like, she was 2 weeks on the job. She lost the job. Mm. But she's not paying for any of it. Like, she lost the job. Like, that sucks and all, but maybe you shouldn't have been going, you know, 40 miles an hour on these switchback dirt roads.
That's confidence. Like, no, you should see some of these roads. It's crazy. You know, like, I haven't had a car that allows me to go up there a lot yet. The car I used to have, the Toyota, when I'm sure my Versa would actually do a little bit better now. But my Toyota, you'd get up to about 8,000 feet and the engine would just stop. And I'd turn around, I'd put reverse and roll back and be like, okay, I guess we're going home now.
My Subaru goes everywhere. I have been all over at least 80% of the dirt roads in these mountains. Like, I've spent hours, days, like weeks worth of time driving on these roads. Like, I feel more confident and familiar with them than she must have.
What is the feeling of that like when you're wandering? Like, what do you think that wandering like that has it's a crucial thing that we're kind of missing? Like how often do you think people just used to wander to find food or like?
Right.
You know, even if you got wheels, you can just go further, you know?
Wandering is crucial. Living in Colorado Springs, it's a big-sized town, it's a big-sized city, whatever, but it is absolutely tiny here. Everyone knows everyone. Like, there are connections everywhere. It blows my mind. Like, the number of times I have met someone for the first time, but they already know my son. And that, honestly, is a really creepy situation to be like, why do you have pictures of my son on your phone when I'm meeting you for the first time here?
That's fucking weird.
They knew Gar. Everyone knows Gar. Okay. And his name is so familiar, like, you say that and everyone's like, oh, Gar? Yeah, it's, you're Leon's mom? I'm like, yeah, what do you mean? Like, of course I'm Leon's mom. How do you know him? Mm. Like, and it's Gar. It's always Gar. One of Leon's friends was at his birthday party last weekend. And her grandma brought her. Apparently her grandma has been best friends with our pastor at church since long before we even started going to church there. I had no idea. There are connections everywhere, and it makes this town feel so small. Mm-hmm. So terribly small. And then to go up into those mountains and look over it.
There are smaller towns. Living up in Loveland, when I was stuck up in Loveland, that's one of my biggest reasons why I wanted to move out of Loveland. And being in Greeley made me feel so much more comfortable because, you know, my son's mother's family was there. Mm-hmm. And, like, last time I took them him up there to see his for a family reunion, there was literally 250 people in a park. And I couldn't conceive of having a family that large because my whole family with extended family is, like, less than 10 people that I communicate with.
See,
and
I'm
so,
on...
like, Loveland is... Like, you know, our city's got, I think we're a couple hundred thousand people. I think we're almost up to 500,000 in Colorado Springs. And then Denver...
We're over 700,000.
Yeah, so it's that's pretty substantial. Whereas Loveland was a town of 75,000. Mm-hmm. So we're about a tenth the size. A lot smaller. And very weird. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Very, very conservative.
Especially when you have that much family there.
Yeah, and compared to, like, Fort Collins is, like, college... Libby's, hippies, heroin, you know, and then Loveland is like the old conservative.
It's more like a college town versus like a family town.
And I fucking hated it.
Well, my parents live in Medford, Oregon. Small town. I think they finally broke 100,000. Like, it's not teeny tiny, but they're astonished that it's grown drastically the same way Colorado Springs has, but it obviously doesn't compare still, but... Mm. I see it as that tiny town. Like, the tiny... You can't go anywhere without everyone knowing all your business.
Mm-hmm. Society. Like, it's the webs of society.
Right.
These little areas of too many people. And you've seen pictures of
people... And people that stay in these small towns. They don't ever leave these small towns.
Or even New York. Could you imagine being a New Yorker?
I call Colorado Springs the new New York. Because, like, seriously, everyone wants to be... I get it. It's beautiful. It's amazing. I absolutely hate the winters here. I'm not built for the cold like that.
Yeah.
But it is absolutely amazing and beautiful here, and I get it. But I wish people would just work on their own states instead of trying to flood everywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wish people would take pride in their own, land and territory. And I get it. Some places it's just difficult to build or grow things there, but you gotta put in the effort.
Why do you think people feel like the grass is greener on the other side? Do you think
they're not watering their own?
So I like wandering. I do feel that wandering is crucial, you know, but wandering doesn't have that attachment of I'm leaving this because I'm going somewhere better.
There's so much more to see, and you need to learn to appreciate what you have.
But do you think the sentiment of trying to find something better just because the movement itself is better? Like, I feel like that could be a dangerous sentiment, and then you could catch yourself in the next place.
Doing the same thing.
And you're like, I gotta go find another pasture. And I feel like that could be a detriment. Like,
so I feel like everyone needs to make that, you know, drastic across the country or across the globe or whatever.
A good trip and go visit and see.
Okay, so if not traveling, one or two major moves like that, you know? And if you end up back in your hometown, that is where you're supposed to be. But you have to understand there is more to the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's so much. Like,
and society is like this little artificial world that we create. You know, when we're inside our little cities, you know, we have all these things that we have to do. We have to work. We have to pay. We're stuck in this web of connections, but it's like this little artificial world
that we've created.
Like, and we can go into a new bubble, but it's just another artificial world.
Mm-hmm.
But being able to wander, I think it's so important.
Being able to explore and experience, you know, as much of the world as you can is mm-hmm. very important. But having roots is important too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having something you can rely on, something you can count on, you know, get an RV and travel, like mm-hmm. go see everything,
but
have
a
house to come home to,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I love that.
Like,
I really do. That's gold right there.
That seems like more of a dream than having the white picket fence farm,
mm-hmm.
you know? I do love Colorado Springs, but there's so many people here. You can't live anywhere without your neighbor's window being like close enough to touch. Like, everywhere, it's so cramped. There's no space to, like, live.
I couldn't imagine living in an actual city. Like, New York.
Like, Denver. Or L.A. I can't.
Like, people who live in these places where you have, like, 100 stories of people
stacked
on top of each other.
There isn't a square foot of green grass for miles. It's all buildings and gravel. No.
Oh, fuck that.
Again, it would be cool to see these places and experience them. And that is the life for some people. That is what they want. And that I totally respect, you know?
So I see this future for me where I've been playing with this idea, and it might change. You know, I'm never too attached to any one way. But I'm practicing, because I have this feeling in my gut. Like, I call it my two-decade plan. So I feel that within about 20 years, by the time my child's about 26, he's going to hopefully be in the capacity to make choices for himself, or at least be self-sufficient enough that I'll be confident enough that he's in a decent enough place. And then I'm pretty sure I might fuck off. Like, I don't want to go, like, I see a future where I might be a vagrant. And, like, not in the pessimistic way. There's been many thinkers across all of time, whether it was Jesus, whether it was Siddhartha Gautama, the Buddha, whether it was, there's many Taoist and Buddhist monks that chagrined having a life to go wander. And that's all they did. They didn't have homes. You know, the Indian Hindi gurus, you know, like, they have the Babas and they have the Swamis.
They had roots to the earth. That's a different connection. That's not a connection for everyone.
I think about the Swamis, though. Like, or not the Swamis. Maybe that's not the right word. But so I'm thinking, like, Ram Dass's teacher, his name is Baba Neem Karoli. And this man had no home. He was never hungry, though. Everybody respected him as a holy man. And I'm not trying to be narcissistic and say, I want to go be a holy man. But I'm just in this one little caricature of this one guy. And this is also how the Buddhist monks were fed. They were fed by what they called alms. So a Buddhist monk would accept any food source from anybody, but they didn't work, so they never had their own money. Their job was service. They went and they talked. They wandered, they'd walk from place to place, and they spent all of their time talking to the people. And they loved the people deeply. You know, the same thing with Jesus. Jesus didn't have a home. He was always on the move.
Mm-hmm.
That's how these thinkers were. And so to get food, they'd have a bowl with them usually. And so that's the Buddha, the Buddha had, they'd call them the bowl, the om bowls, the bowls of alms. And then they would ask, they were beggars basically, but most of the time they wouldn't really beg because people would see them, they'd know what they were doing. And they'd mm-hmm. say, this is a holy man. And so they'd give him food. And that's why the like even now in India, I can't remember what type of teachers are called, but they still to the day, when they go out, they might be vegetarian when they're in the monastery, but when they're out, when they take alms, they'll eat meat because they'll eat anything that's offered to them, you know, because that's how they eat. You know, and like, I'm not saying that's what I want to do, but I admire these men and women that have done this over time, and I could not imagine working for the rest of my life. And I'm not saying I'm unhappy, I'm not miserable. I'm the happiest person in my job. I love my job, I love what I do. I've carved this little piece of happiness with what I can do, with what I'm doing, and I'm doing it for my son, because I'm not gonna go drag him out to go be a vagrant with me. So that's why I call it my 2-decade plan.
Right.
But that's why I'm fasting. I'm learning how, I wanna be confident that I can go days without food. I wanna be confident that I can drop things. You know, my biggest attachments are chemical. And I wanna be confident that I can go and be completely sober from marijuana. You know, I want to find these situations where the biggest thing is that I don't know yet what's going to happen, but I see this future where I'm going to be dealing with harsher times. And I think that's one of my futures, though. I see it, you know.
I feel like that's, I mean, we're living in some really heavy times right now.
Mm-hmm.
The world's a really dark place right now. And I feel like it's only going to be getting harder for all of us. In one way or another, unless we love each other, like, can we please just love each other? It's not that hard. Like, take care of the people around you. But what you just explained doesn't really sound like. Let's see how. It doesn't sound like a beggar on the street. It sounds like someone who's trying to survive in a dark world.
Mm-hmm. Like, I see a service. I want to serve. I want to go talk to people.
And you're good at talking to people.
And I want to figure out how to go. I want to see the world in a way. I want to go, you know.
Like, but that's how you're going to survive, is by doing what you love. Mm-hmm. Like, that's when you're really going to be happiest in life. And you're happy now being a dad at this point. And this is a time period. You will move on from this time period and this will become a memory.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to appreciate the different points in life. But once that point comes, that is what is going to be what makes you happy.
That's true.
Like, that's...
That's the philosophy, like, right there.
I mean, I love working because I'm able to take care of Leon.
Mm-hmm.
I don't love working because I get bored doing the same thing all day, every single day. I just personally...
And at the same time, you're away from your child.
And I'm away from my child. In a perfect world,
you'd be teaching your child.
Exactly.
At all times, you'd be showing him how to do things. And the only reason that you have to be away is because you have to support him.
Mm-hmm. We gotta make sure he's fed and he has a roof over his head. Like, there's little things that you just, they have to be done. I feel like I would rather work 3 or 4, maybe even 5 part-time jobs and have a complete variety of work. Like, that is something I've only thought about recently, but it sounds
like an Easter basket of jobs.
Right. Like, I'm doing this Monday and I'm doing that Tuesday and Thursday, and then this one on Wednesday, and that I'll do Friday and Saturday. And
that's
like
an interesting idea.
And I can, like,
I've never considered something like
right,
that.
And I've only thought about that recently, but man, I am like, I've worked a lot of really cool jobs. I have a lot of really interesting ones. I've met quite a variety of people just through these different jobs, but I got bored of them. I got bored of doing the same thing all day, every single. They're great jobs. I loved them, but I myself just can't do that repetition. Mm-hmm. I need adventure. I need variety. I need spontaneous things in my life.
If you were taking care of your own homestead, if you're a farmer, if you had a family, you might have to be delegating tasks out. But you're probably not doing the same shit every day.
No. No, there's still...
Or maybe a fence blows down, and so all of a sudden out of nowhere you gotta go build a fence.
Now you gotta go, you know, get your tool belt and do some hard work. Like, mm-hmm. I love having a variety of, you know, I'm really good at office work. I can do the monotonous computer
dribble.
Reception. Yeah, I can handle that. I can't do it for 40 to 50 hours a week. I love doing physical jobs.
Well, yeah, even if you were doing something that you loved, if it was the favorite thing in the world.
But I need that variety.
Yep.
Like, I need that variety. And then, like, at the same time, I have all these millions of art projects I really want to do. Like, but I don't have time for those when I'm working 50 hours at the same boring job and I'm I get home from work and I'm so exhausted.
You still
got to be a parent. You still got to do the dinner, the bath, the, you know, book before bed. Like, and when you don't get off work till, like, Leon, going to school from 7 o'clock in the morning to 5:30 at night, like, because of my work schedule, Monday through Friday, like, we pick him up at 5:30, we get home, you know, 5:45, close to 6, depending on if we go to the grocery store, gotta feed him, bathe him. Oh, guess what? He's gotta go to bed because he has to get up early tomorrow morning for school again. Like, there's no time in there. There's no time to be a decent parent, let alone enjoy any of your hobbies.
And a little bit of guilt comes in there.
A lot of guilt comes in there.
Even though you're doing what you're supposed to.
Doing what you're supposed to, but it's hard. You can't, and it may be selfish, but when you don't get to do the things that you enjoy, your hobbies, the things that make you happy, one way or another, you're going to get upset about that. Whether you keep it inside or you're completely open and verbal about it.
Or some people I've seen do the opposite, where... In order to protect themselves.
Right, and that's not
healthy. They refuse to have
hobbies,
and they say, I'm not interested in anything.
No, and that goes back to, are you just a parent, or are you your own person as well?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to be able to take care of you if you're going to take care of these little kids. Like, they are not going to survive if you can't. Focus comes back to you.
Or if they see unhappiness, it's modeled.
Yes.
How about this for a segue? What is it like co-parenting when you're outside of the relationship with that person? What are the challenges, and what are the things that you've been trying to institute to make it easier for yourself?
It requires a lot of self-control. When me and Leon's dad first split, it was rough. He was not around for anything for a long time. He's back in the picture now, and he has been for a while, and I do give him a lot of props for stepping back up the way he has. He's been, you know, all in all, a good dad to Leon. A better one, but I'm still here doing it. But...
Thank God. Thank nature. Thank Krishna that at least he is fucking present, man.
Oh, yeah. I'm very thankful. And, like, the thing is, like, I feel like Leon needs to completely build and develop his own perspective and, like, ideas of his dad. He can't listen. I don't speak ill of Gar around him. I don't voice a lot of opinions. And admittedly, mine and Gar's relationship has gotten to be a lot better lately.
Me and Dorian were telling stories about Gar. We were like, oh, you know, me and him hung out together when we were kids. And Leon was like, you know my dad? And I was like, oh, fuck yeah. We hung out when we were kids.
Before you were even here.
Oh, hell yeah. We know him pretty well.
There was a point Gar was the best thing that ever happened to us. And then everything crashed. And it took a long time for him to become what he is now, but I have a lot of respect for him. Like, he and I, we can sit and we can talk about things now. For the longest time, we couldn't even look at each other at a drop-off. We used school, so we didn't even have to see each other.
What do you think causes that when people have to split? And then there's this awkward situation because you're bound because you have children.
You had a child because you did truly care about this person at some point.
Is there that pain that makes you not want to look at the other person? Is it like avoidance of pain?
Like, in a way, I'm sure it is.
Or is it connected? Like,
you know, Gar and I were really young when we had Leon, and we had only known each other for just a few, like, 4 months before we got pregnant. Like, it was a really quick thing. We didn't actually know each other. We didn't actually know life with each other. 4 months of knowing each other and we were pregnant. That was just, it could have worked out. Things like that do work out all the time, and it's really cool to see things like that, but for Gar and I, it didn't. It was... It's like having a baby with a total stranger. You know, you don't know what holidays are like with their family. You don't know how they respond on your birthday how much they're going to be there for you, you know. And admittedly, when I got pregnant, we moved back out to Oregon. Gar came with me. And I really thought that was, like, a really good sign. And then once we got out there, he didn't have any family out there. He didn't know anybody. He made this huge leap for me. And it was just not easy on him. And in turn, was really hard on our relationship because I didn't even know how to deal with that. Plus, I was pregnant and hormonal and crazy and, you know, 19 years old. Plus, I started college. I was walking to college with all these books while I'm pregnant in the summertime. It was not fun. It really was not. There was a lot going on. And being a young mom doesn't mean it's impossible. It does require a village. And people who do it without a village, I truly don't understand how. Like, it requires a lot of help. You know, if you want to work that job and go to school to better yourself, who's going to watch that kid?
So would you tell other young mothers and young fathers that they have to accept that help gracefully?
Yes, absolutely.
Not push it away.
Do not be, accept it all. Be appreciative. You know, if you have people there, you need to let them know how much you appreciate them.
And it's normal, and this is how it's supposed to be.
Yes, it does require a village. You cannot do, and again, to anyone who is truly a single parent doing this absolutely by yourself, I can't even begin to imagine. I don't know how you do it. I wish I could be that strong, because I personally feel like I'm failing Leon daily. Like, I'm very critical of myself. I'm very hard about whether or not I'm doing things right, which everyone tells me only means that I care enough. Like, you care, you're trying to do things the right way. Yeah, that's true. I do care, but am I actually doing these things right? Am I actually failing him, or am I just overwhelming myself, thinking I haven't given him enough, when truly he's got more love than he could ever need? He's got the things he needs.
Imagine, you know, the opposite stance. Imagine if you had 100% confidence in what you were doing. Wouldn't you make more mistakes if you weren't doubting your ability? Wouldn't more mistakes happen if you were completely clear on your parenting style?
I mean, probably, right?
It's a little like fertilizer to be like, oh, I need to at least examine these, and then I can get better, you know?
I feel like it doesn't matter how much you master one thing. Life is constantly changing. Mm-hmm. Between them growing and us growing. Like, they don't realize that they're watching us grow up too, you know?
No idea, because we're huge.
Like, right. And we are the responsible ones who take care of everything, so they think we know it all. Like, they don't listen to us when we tell them we know it all, but they do believe it. They think we've got the whole world figured out, and I don't. Like,
mm-hmm. If anything, I've been so grateful, because he's almost been like an emotional steroid. Mm-hmm. For me to look at how I've been growing, and I don't know where I'd be. You know, we're not that old. We're not that old in the grand scheme of things. You know, a lot of people a generation above, I feel, still have this like we're babies. You know, because we're in our mid 20s still. That's not that old in the grand scheme. But like, if I had never had my son, I feel like I would be so much more immature than I am now. And there's not many people that are our age that I fully trust.
Right.
I agree with that. You know, like,
yep.
And so, like, it's a lot of times I'm grateful. I'm so grateful because, and without him, he's taught me about myself. Through him, he has taught me about me.
Mm-hmm.
He's taught me without words.
Help me figure out who I actually am.
And I couldn't imagine ever figuring out any of these things that I think I know now, at least, without him. You know, and I'm so grateful every day, even if it's hard. You know, like, one day I'm going to thank him when he's in his mid-20s.
I thank Leon every day. I let him know how much he means to me, what he's done for my life. Like, he's not supposed to be the one to comfort me through things. Mm-hmm. But regardless of whether or not he's there, he's what gets me through it all.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
strength.
He is my strength. He is what keeps me going, what wakes me up in the morning, what makes me want to do everything the right way. Like, I can't begin to imagine a life without him, and I don't even want to. Like, that, it's hard doing this, but it's so worth it. Like, it's so easy to look at him and smile. Even if we've had a rough day together, I can still look at him and it just makes me smile.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot in life that does that. I don't know. It's such a special bond. He and I are very close.
You could see it.
We can conquer the world together.
That's awesome. He's a tough kid. Mm-hmm. And I'm really proud of you.
I love him. I'm very proud of him. You know, with everything he's got going on, he just keeps going. He keeps smiling. He keeps cracking jokes and just having fun. And that's something I'm learning from every single day.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how he can smile going through some of the stuff he's going through, because I'm not going through it. I'm watching him go through it, and I'm still in pieces over it.
Yeah, like, they're tougher than we are.
Resilient.
What does the word spirituality mean to you?
Ooh.
How are, and as a modification on that, how connected, and are they, in fact, even the same thing with what religion and spirituality offers to a practitioner or a believer?
I believe that religion is man's twist on spirituality. To have a spiritual relationship is how you experience any sort of higher power. Hmm. You know, religion is
what is that? What is that spiritual relationship? What is it? Is it? Is it? Does it require a? Is it all it is it for me?
It just requires love.
Something outside of
it just requires love. Like, you know, I am Christian. Like, I'm here to tell the world that Jesus loves you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to openly say that because everyone needs to know. And whether or not you believe in, you know, Jesus, Buddha, any higher power, I see the separation of the religions as like the separation of language. Mm-hmm. It's all portraying the same freaking thing.
There's one unit.
There is one root between it all. If you compare all the books and all the similarities between each culture and each religion, the number of similarities is...
Or it could have been a group of a very similar thinkers 6,000 years ago preaching similar things, and then it just... That's why I take it.
It could have started as one single thing. It did start as one single thing.
Well, that's
like the same way language did. Like
that's why I'm taking it from as many ways as I can. You know, I constantly always have a book of the world's religions, and I don't consider myself a religious man.
But, I don't consider myself religious either. I'd say I have a relationship, a spiritual relationship.
I wouldn't say
that
I
is
even
very
have that
specifically
yet.
Between me. God.
So I've been praying recently. I pray at night before I go to bed, but I'm very idiosyncratic about it because I pray to Krishna, I pray to God, I pray to Yahweh, I pray to Atman.
It's the same prayer to all of them?
And then at the end I always go, I don't know if I'm praying outside myself or if I'm praying to somebody inside myself. And I always segue that. I'm always like, I have no idea what direction this is going, but I'm going to put this out there anyways. And one of the things that's influenced my thought on it is in Hinduism. Are you very familiar with Hinduism much?
I wouldn't say I'm the most familiar with it.
So very basic synopsis of the hierarchy, really. And then I'm going based a lot off of the Bhagavad, which is a lot more with Krishna. And there's a lot of different people who do different routes. And so basically within Hinduism, there's Bhagavan. And Bhagavan is an impersonal godhead. And so every bit of reality, every material object, my heart, my thoughts, Bhagavan is reality. And so Bhagavan incarnates into reality through Vishnu. And Vishnu is the one who created the world and put out all of the separations. And in Hinduism, there's worlds. There's billions of worlds, not just this world. So there's other worlds with other, and that's where the demigods come from, is from other worlds mm-hmm. with other different organisms. And so Vishnu creates all the worlds and he creates ours. And then Bhagavan incarnates as Krishna. And Krishna is considered the ultimate personality of the Godhead. Whereas we are all personalities of the Godhead within Hinduism. So I have this thing inside me called the Para-Atman. And Para-Atman is the piece of Bhagavan. It's the piece of Krishna that gives me my soul.
The connection to everything.
My spark, my thought, my passion. That Para-Atman is my piece of Bhagavan. Mm-hmm. Whereas Krishna would be the ultimate personality. And he's the one who speaks. And he's kind of like the Jesus of Hinduism. So in the Bhagavad, Krishna is speaking to Arjuna. Like directly, and he's basically having this moment where they have this huge war going on, and it starts out in the chariot, and Krishna's driving the chariot, and Arjuna is just in pieces because he's like, he's a great warrior, but in this direct battle, he has family on both sides, and he's like, I can't fight, I can't do this, you know, I cannot imagine having to kill my family, and no matter what side I fight on, I'm gonna hurt somebody I love, mm-hmm. and that's the premise for the Bhagavad, and Krishna basically comes down and. The idea is, anyways, I digress. So that's the basic of that. I don't know where I was going with that. I apologize. But,
no, you're fine.
But like
there's that's the similarities that I'm talking about, though.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
Within Christianity, talks about all of us creating the body of Christ.
The Holy Spirit, I would
say. Within each and every single one of us. You see those similarities that I'm talking about. Like, there's, it doesn't matter what culture, it doesn't matter what religion it is. Those, in one way or another, whatever language it is, there is, whether it's a part of one thing or talking about how you are all tiny pieces in the grand scheme of things. Like, it's all coming to one whole part. Like, how we are all connected through one thing, you know? What was it? So, Macklemore? So, whatever God you believe in, we all come from the same one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that...
So, there's a word for it. It's called omnism. O-M-N-I-S-M. Omnism is the belief that all gods are the same. And that it's just human society that splits them up into different particulates.
That, I'm really curious about that. I want to find out more about that, actually.
Would you mind looking at the time?
101.
Okay, we have to start wrapping up a little bit because I got to go to the doctor and get an ultrasound. But
it's your surgery.
Yep. Let me see what questions I got. What is your favorite Bible story and what did it teach you? And you can synonymize it if you want to tell it shortly too. So.
Hang on, let me see if I can find this. It's honestly, it's one of the most popular and overused ones.
Do it. Top of your head. Spit it out. What did it mean to you?
First time I actually heard it was in a movie, A Walk to Remember. They used it as their wedding vows. It talks about how love is patient, love is kind, love does not boast, is not envious. Let me look for that wall. So anyways, the one thing that I've got hardest from all of this is that we very simply need to love each other and work together. And the idea that love does not boast, it's not angry, that it cares, that it just takes care. Like, that seems like such a simple concept that should be easy enough for anyone to grasp. And that's just the one that I've tried the hardest to get across. I will tell anyone I love them. I do love them as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
You may upset me, you may bother me, you may piss me off in one way or another, but still, I care about you. I'm sick of seeing the world so cruel and so full of hate. Like, the only way for there to be enough love is for everyone to spread love. Like, just overflow everyone's cup with it. Don't let them have a bad day. Don't let them go through things by themselves and feel unloved. Like, they just, and that's the easiest thing. You don't have to spend money. You don't have to buy things or go places. Just be there for people.
How important is unconditional love given to a stranger sporadically for no?
Wow. Okay. That, perfect. So several years ago, I was at America the Beautiful by myself, just longboarding around the park. And I met this homeless guy there. His name was Michael. He had a dog. I don't know what it was because I, young single girl, you know, around America the Beautiful by myself, like, that's not really a good idea, but there was something I was comfortable about talking to this guy. We sat, we smoked bowls, and we talked for like 3 hours. Like 3 hours about what got him to this position in life, about his faith and religion and concepts, and he blew my mind. Like, the conversation we had that day was unreal. Like, it truly opened my eyes a lot. About 2 years ago, I had gone to Maggie's farm to get some weed, right? And lo and behold, Michael has behind the counter.
Not homeless anymore.
Look at that. A job, has a home, has a good, like, wow. Like, he built himself up. Like,
that's fantastic.
And he remembered me, dude. He remembered me from the park, and it took me a second. Like, I had seen him a couple times in that shop. But he said my name, and I was always like, you've seen my ID or whatever. Like,
there's
yeah.
There's a lot of times that you don't remember. Like,
but how often do you pass a stranger, and are you... I had an ex-boyfriend who was truly cruel to people. He was like Satan walking the planet himself. He was one of the cruelest people I've ever known, and the way he treated homeless people made me sick.
Mm-hmm.
Made me truly sick. Like, and to the point where I lost it. I freaked out. I lost it on him. You can't treat people like this. Like, this is disgusting. He flipped. He started making bags of, like, extra supply stuff he would give out to people on the corner. Like, and how many lives changed or didn't end that day at least, because he gave him that bag instead of saying something crude or being that mean person.
Just like, a little bit of compassion.
A little bit of compassion goes a long way. Mm. You don't know how much that drop of kindness means to someone.
And it spreads.
And it does spread. And instead of them being upset and having a bad day, and I like, you know, your drop analogy shooting too. Up a place.
Imagine a bowl and you drop a color and
like how and it spreads. Yeah. You know, and it may be a very faint color, but that will spread.
You got more drops going on.
Uh-huh. And as soon as your cup is overflowing, that is all going to spread everywhere around you. Mm. Like, it's just important to love everyone. That's to not... Don't get me wrong. Everyone has selfish moments in life. I do. We all do. But love, if you can acknowledge them and try to keep them under control.
And a little bit of kindness can be a separate act, even when we're struggling.
It
can
be a little bit of kindness can be good for you too. Mm-hmm. It can make, like, it's not something like, you don't take a picture of you giving someone cash. You don't do that. That's not, that is there for you to show the world, oh, look, I'm being a good person. Like, you're not being a good person. Like, you're not.
I just saw an interesting thread on social media exactly about that, where this person was digging out, and he's like, and he had an interesting perspective. He's like, we need more people going out and helping others. You know, it's on a spiritual group. He's like, so stop talking about it and go fucking do it.
Exactly.
Yeah, and a lot of people got on there, and he's like, when you do it, you need to tell everybody you're doing it, because he's like, and I think what he was trying to say was exactly what you're getting on. He's like, when you go do something, if you like, hey, this is what I'm doing, this is how you treat people, you can have an impact on people as well. And I get that, but a lot of people were harking on him, because at the same time, I like a little bit of selfless bit of kindness sometimes. Like, I like to do stuff for people and not say a damn thing about it.
Exactly.
And it makes it almost more valuable and more potent to me. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't say anything.
Exactly. Like, you know, you can, you know, if you want to post about it, be like, I'm feeling good today. Let's go spread some love.
There's a time and place for both.
Exactly. You don't need to be like, hey, I just gave this person $5. Like, that's not... Yeah. No, you know, take someone out to lunch or whatever at McDonald's. It don't have to be anything expensive. Talk to them. Get to know them a little bit. And then tell the world about this amazing person that you met. Mm-hmm. Not how you met them or, like, why you ended up meeting them. Just tell them about the person that you met. The experiences that they lived. You know, you can talk about those things without, you know, boasting about the good that you did. Because, like, there's way more to that interaction than the good that you did.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I'm so grateful for you being here with me today, Megan.
Thank you, Brandon. This was honestly really, really cool. Yeah. I enjoyed it a lot.
And we'll do it again, you know, and like...
I'm excited.
As a last little bit, short and sweet, say something nice to the people. Give a little bit of love out. You know, if people listen to this, what would you tell them?
Love you. I love you all. I may not know you. I may not know what you're going through, but I love you. And it will be okay. And days are hard, but you will get through them because you're strong, because you are loved, because Jesus loves you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.